five, four, three, two.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. For those of you that...
I'm Matt.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
I thought about that this morning.
Yeah, it's just not a part of the spiel anymore. Okay, yeah. I'm Steven.
Oh, they already know who I am.
Yeah, you're Matt. Okay. Yeah. Hi,
We've been
everybody.
Over this.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Sorry for no episode last week. We just didn't have an episode last week.
It was 4th of July weekend. It was a long weekend. Just didn't get around to it.
You know, it is what it is. But thank you.
Happens.
Thank you for tuning in, because this week is special for a myriad of reasons.
Yep.
If you saw, we're talking about 90s hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that have been with us since the start, you know, kind of at the start of the Radcast, we try to make 90s sports discussions, and make it a point to get to those.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, nearing the beginning of the podcast, we did 90s baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Then we sat down and talked about 90s football.
Yeah, that was
with
fun.
Jeremy Weed.
Yep.
That was 3 years ago.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Jeez
so,
Louise.
Yes, we're picking back up on the 90s sports discussions with our favorite sport, and with one that is going to be no less than a spirited discussion, because our guest is going to really bring in the bang for the buck.
A lot of personal touches
exactly.
in there.
Yes. We will get to him here momentarily. But before we get into 90s hockey with our guest, why don't you let everybody know where they can still find us?
Yeah, you can on social media. So far, we're only in one spot, and we're on Instagram. We're at the Radcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's cast spelled with a K. Radcast is all one word. And then you can find us on all your major podcast apps. If you're listening now, you found us. Hello.
Thank you.
Wherever applicable, on your Stitchers, on your Apple Podcasts, please make sure to give us 5 stars, rating, and you know, that rating and review.
Yes.
Even if you say we suck, that's fine. I disagree.
But
if it's 5 stars, I can suck.
Yeah, you know, so,
I can suck for 5 stars.
All right.
Full quote of the episode. I'll suck for 5 stars.
All right. Enough of the chicanery.
Hee hee.
Because we're about to get into a hefty topic.
Ooh, baby.
Whenever we're talking about...
This could literally be, like, you could do a whole series on 90s hockey.
If you listened... Exactly. If you listened to us for baseball and for football, and for those of you that have any... passing knowledge of 90s sports, it is such an amazing decade.
It is an undertaking for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. And definitely with hockey, because there was a vast sea change with hockey in North America, more specifically in the U.S. But like Matt said, it's a massive undertaking, taking on 90s hockey, especially with how monumental the sport was, and or how monumental the 90s was for the sport.
Oh, yeah.
So we, of course, could give you our interpretation of the 90s of just, you know, reading after the fact, you know, being obsessed with hockey at a young age in the late 90s.
Yeah.
We could do that just Matt and I,
or
we could consult with somebody who's a little older than us, meaning he actually lived some pretty
formative
years in the 90s, especially as a 90s hockey fan. If you listen to Sucktastic Cinema, you heard us talk to him about Judge Dredd. You heard him on the episode where we talked Street Fighter with our buddy Chris Haney as well. It's one of the more downloaded episodes of Sucktastic Cinema. He is back for his first appearance on the Radcast. Our good buddy and we very much appreciate his support. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Joe Gilbert. Joe Gilbert.
Hello again, everybody.
Hello,
yes.
Joey Jojo Jr. Shavity.
That's the worst name ever. I've ever heard.
Joey Jojo!
Welcome to the Radcast for the first time.
Yes. No kidding. I went from a sinner to somebody that's totally rad.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. You can still be a sinner if you like. It's just... We just won't put any more out.
Well, I kind of am already, but...
Yeah. All right, you go. Yes. There you go.
Very much appreciated.
I'm actually in the sin bin. Ooh.
Hell yeah.
The sin bin.
Penalty box, baby.
And Joe, in the 90s, you were adolescent age, teenage age. At the end of the 90s, you were 16. So definitely have more of a recollection of these things than we do. But where does your hockey fandom start? Because Joe is also co-host of the podcast, From the Point Podcast, with our buddy Chris Haney, who we just mentioned. And they mainly focus in on Blues hockey, but there's always hockey discussion to be had. Mm-hmm. So, Joe, where did your history with the game start?
So it started in the 1990-91 season. Mm-hmm. And we have talked about this offline. We talked about it actually in the 16th episode from the Point.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Hull went on almost a record-shattering year.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
The best time to get into hockey was when he scored 86 goals.
Especially Blues hockey.
Yeah.
Because he put Blues hockey on the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was something that was completely unheard of. This team before that, and Chris and I had mentioned it before, it was a lunch pail blue-collar team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But with the acquisition of Hull, this team suddenly became very skilled and deadly with every single forward group that was – on the roster.
Yeah, the tandem of him and Adam Oates.
Yeah.
But with a little bit of an edge and a little bit of sandpaper.
Yeah.
Still guys that would be willing to drop the gloves at any moment's notice. Yeah. And I think that's actually a good observation, is the fact that the 90s was this conglomeration of the skill that would be seen in years to come, the skill that was being seen a little bit beforehand, obviously, and I kind of need to make a footnote here, of Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The explosion of hockey in the 90s is all due to the infamous trade in 1988 where he was sent to the Los Angeles Kings.
Yep. Yep.
Promise Miss, I wouldn't do this.
But you take somebody who, even because until the 1990s, really a lot of what hockey you see in America was either whatever they'd show in the Winter Olympics, of course, everyone knew the Miracle on Ice. It was such a huge historical moment in American sports. And then NBC would show the All-Star game. And then they'd show the occasional playoff game.
Yeah.
And then you had ESPN every now and then showing games. But then you also had something called Sports Channel America, which I think I read a statistic to where, you know, 5 million households would have it, but 50 million would have ESPN.
Yeah.
So Wayne Gretzky started... You know, Wayne Gretzky was still known. I mean, he might not have been, you know, synonymous with American audiences the same way like a Michael Jordan would, to where, like, even if you didn't watch basketball, you knew Michael Jordan. But like Joe said, he comes to Los Angeles, which was still a relatively small market. But Los Angeles, it's glitz and glamour.
Now you have celebrities coming to
games.
It was a thing.
Yeah.
You had Jack Nicholson and all of these Stallones.
Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn.
Just showing up randomly right in the front seats, center ice.
Yeah.
Near the penalty box, near the home team's bench, it became a thing.
Yeah, and with that popularity mixed with kind of the rumblings of, you know, you have your cities that had the teams. You had the St. Louis's, to where hockey has been big here since the team came to town.
Yeah.
And you had the original six cities in America.
It's different spots on the map.
Exactly. Yeah. So you had this groundswell to where now it's starting to... You know, networks are like, oh, what's with all these celebrities making appearances in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
What's with all this stuff happening? Because, again, places like NBC had the All-Star game.
Yeah.
But now you get stations really starting to want to test the waters. You have Fox.
Brands. Nike.
Yeah, exactly. You had Fox, the NHL on Fox. They signed a 5-year deal
still in the early 90s in 1994 to test the water, making a huge gamble with hockey. You had ESPN signing deals with hockey, which meant ABC. So you had it was like it's crazy to think hockey was a gamble to try and put on a network.
That's wild.
And and also the marketing that came from that, the coolest game on earth.
Yeah.
You know, in America, what's the face we're going to put on this?
Dan Moriarty.
Yes, exactly. But something snappy. Yeah, something snappy and punny, the coolest game on earth. Yeah. So it's crazy to think where we're at now with hockey to where it's still an overlooked sport, but nowhere near the way it was at the beginning of the 90s.
Yeah.
But just to see that it's only been a shed over 30 years that hockey has really been massively popular in America.
Yeah.
And it was, it's specifically due to that trade, but I see it as this was, and I hate to say for fans that may be older than us and reside up in Canada, but to me, 90s hockey is the modern golden age.
Yeah. I was saying that we were watching a couple things before you got over here. Steven still has a VHS that our older brother got for his birthday 1 year, where it's NHL's Masked Men.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's from like 97. It's just like all the best goalies from that time. And so there's a litany of highlights. And then we were watching like great Gary Thorne calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I made that comment. I said, this is the golden age.
Yeah.
This, like, with the game changed. Mm-hmm. Like, it got faster. Yep. Goalies got bigger.
It got more flashy.
Yeah, exactly. And so you had the superstars that came out of it were, like, marquee stars.
Yeah.
You want to see Jaromir Jagr in his flowing Kentucky waterfall mullet.
You want to see Brett Hall.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to see more Wayne Gretzky. You want to see
Forsberg and Sakic, and you want to see the Avalanche.
Yeah.
You want to see Patrick Waugh be a fucking maniac.
It's prime time
now.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's prime time.
But it was also still in this odd period of time where it was also very much a primitive game in a lot of ways compared to how it is now. I mean, the person that got me into hockey was my grandma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember her saying, and then along the way, years later, other people that were older than me say that the saying used to be, go to a fight, see a hockey game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because you had a numerous amount of enforcers, Bob Probert, Joey Koser, and
Marty McSorley.
And of course, two blue notes, Tony Twist
and
Kelly
Chase.
Exactly. Well, it's crazy because it's almost like it's now there's a spotlight, because later on the game changed and didn't have as much of an edge, and it wasn't as rough and tumble. There were some things that you used to maybe get away with penalty wise now that you can't. It's almost like it was this underground thing to where, like, you could get away with the way that it was played in the 70s, like the roughneck way of play, the way that it was played in the 80s, some of the hits you could get away with. And then in the 90s, as it got later in the 90s, it still was this rough game, but now it's like, this is mainstream.
Yeah.
So we may have to reel it in because, you know, there's
this violence, but also on the other hand, that's still what people equate with it. Like, how many people are you like, you don't want to go to a game with me? And they're like, sure, just as long as we see some fights.
Yeah.
Something like
and
that.
And there are nowhere near as many fights now. Mm-hmm.
It's a dying breed.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact, going back to the 90s, helmets were optional.
Exactly.
That's true, yeah.
Craig McTavish was the last Cavalier against that.
Yeah. It'd be funny because he's now one of the Blues assistant coaches. It'd be funny if he wore a helmet as a coach.
It's like, what the hell?
Well, with it... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mentioned Peter Forsberg, and you mentioned helmets, Joe, and I just think of Jofa.
Of course. I mean, the ugliest designed helmets ever, but all the stars wore on
Forsberg,
Jagr.
Esa Tiikkanen, Matt
Gretzky
Sundin.
Himself.
Yeah, Gretzky, Sundin,
So with the 90s, with hockey, and again, like we said at the top, folks, and this is the last I'll say of it, because, like, we could go on and on. We could spend a whole episode talking about how it's tough for us to have a whole, just a single episode about just a one big decade.
Oh, yeah.
But with something we should talk about that kind of set hockey apart. And it's kind of like people shake their heads, you know, it's just head in the hand, shake their head, and it's like, what the hell were we thinking type deal. Yeah. It's a lot of the, along with marketing, some of the stunts pulled. Like right. some of the things that certain networks tried to do.
Like a glow puck.
or instituting the third jersey kind of initiative to where, you know, certain numbers of teams would try to implement a third jersey because now there's innovations in printing. So like a CCM has all these color swatches that they can do with their sublimation the way they do jerseys.
Plus,
now,
the more jerseys you create, the more you sell.
Exactly. Yeah. The more they're finding how they can monetize this exposure of hockey. So Joe, why don't you, let's just start with, we mentioned Fox. So Fox was a big presence in 90s hockey, and one thing they tried implementing was something called the Fox Track or the Glow Puck. Why don't you let our audience know what the hell is the Glow Puck?
So the Glow Puck was essentially a I'm laughing because in theory it was this gimmick that was trying to let the average non-hockey fan in on where the puck exactly was on the ice.
Right. Yeah.
The game is so fast. And if you go back into the mid-90s, we're talking about CRT TVs. We're not talking about high definition.
Oh, yeah.
So, hey, I will be the first to admit, as a kid, as a budding hockey fan, it was hard to keep up with that puck.
Sure, yeah.
All the time. It was just such a fast-paced game. So Fox decided to implement this Fox Tracks, and there are a couple of things about it. They had this little comet-like glow on the puck as it was moving on the ice.
Yeah.
But when somebody would wind up and take a shot, it would glow, I believe it was red, and it would track how fast the puck actually was shot at the goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter if it was a slap shot or a wrist shot. But on the other hand, the average viewer also found it very annoying and very grating over time.
Yeah.
So eventually Fox decided to go away with it. I think it was actually just the 95-96 season. It could have also been the 96-97 season.
I think they did it through 98, but it became more and more sporadic.
Yeah,
that's one of my first hockey memories is the glow puck.
They first implemented it in the 95-96 All-Star game.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember it being a thing when I was a kid and then going back a couple years ago and watching it. And it is very distracting. I could see just, you know, a promotional thing. It's like, oh, that's fun, maybe just for the All-Star game. But I think they talked to journalist Peter Jennings, who's World News Tonight and ABC, and he's Canadian and a big hockey fan. He was at that All-Star game, and they asked him, well, what do you think of this Fox Track puck? And he's like, I think it's dumb. He's like, I don't think it's a good idea. And many Canadian pundits and analysts agreed with him. They were like, do you think American viewers are stupid that they can't find? Now, it also could be the mindset of, like you said, Joe, depending on the TV you're watching on, it could have been tough to follow. But all in all, the casual hockey fan found it annoying, and the diehard hockey fan were like, you're insulting our intelligence. I can follow the puck.
Yeah.
So it ultimately was a dud. Another thing that was, did you have anything to say about that?
I was about to transition into another topic, but
going to say, you know, as far as what duds were, you know, kind of dipping your toes in the water to see what would play. The hockey sweaters are one of my favorite parts.
Yeah.
Of the
jerseys.
Game. Jerseys to the layman.
I still don't call it a
nomenclature. A lot of people like to use is sweaters. Same way like kit. For soccer teams or football teams.
Yeah.
But the jerseys or sweaters, they're one of my favorite parts of hockey. And part of that was kind of a cool promotional thing was the implementation of, you know, third jerseys and alternate jerseys.
Yeah.
And some were cool, some were not.
Yes.
Now, the first rash of third jerseys, you had the Ducks. So the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, which came about in 1993 because of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one with the duck busting out of the ice?
Wild Wing?
Yep. Yeah,
bursting out of the ice.
I hate that one.
A lot of people say it looked like a roller hockey jersey.
They brought it back, actually, as a reverse retro jersey.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those that had, like, a cult following.
I think calling it a roller hockey jersey is a perfect description of it.
The Bruins one, which were called, and a lot of these weren't affectionately called these nicknames. Yeah. They're called the Pooh Bear jersey, which is just like this gold jersey with like black trim with a big Bruin bear head on there.
I had a Sergei Samsonov card.
I had a Ray Bourque card where he's wearing it. Yeah. The King's jersey, which, Joe, what were those called?
Burger King jerseys. The
Burger King.
These jerseys are ugly, too.
You Google LA Kings Burger King jersey.
Yeah.
They're god awful.
Wayne Gretzky looks like he's loving wearing it.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the reason why he wanted to trade out of there eventually, and we grabbed him in 96.
It's like, well, you ought to see the third jerseys that we are maybe suggesting.
Yeah.
Even though that myth has been debunked that we were going to go with the trumpet jerseys. But
the Canucks one, which is, it's like this red, it's a lot of gradation of like color gradients.
Yeah.
Like this one, the Canucks jersey, it's the skate logo, and it has red starting at the bottom and then kind of the gradient into the black. It doesn't look good. The only one that I think stuck and I still love is the Penguins one, which was be known as Robo Penguin, which again, it's this gray to white or gray kind of gradation with the Penguin logo.
Yeah.
But that was the first rash of third jerseys. Sure. And then as the years went on, you had
Coyotes.
The Coyotes had one, which is kind of like a desert motif.
What were
some
other ones, Joe?
Well, that one was called the Space Coyote,
the
actually.
That's right. It reminds me of the episode of The Simpsons where Homer eats the chili pepper and he sees the coyote mirage in the
voiced by Johnny Cash. Yeah.
The Blackhawks, the Rangers, and their Lady Liberty jerseys. The Sharks.
Oh, I love the Lady Liberty
jerseys. The Sharks alternate jersey became...
with the gray sleeve. Yeah,
which became their home jersey later on.
Yeah.
The Stars, same thing.
Yeah.
The Lightning, who had an ugly one. The Blues, who theirs became later on their home and away jersey.
Oh, yeah.
But Joe, there's also one that... the organization thought this will really pump life into a storied franchise, but it went over like a lead balloon, and that is the New York Islanders.
Oh, God.
And that was more of a rebrand than it was a third jersey. The fisherman logo is either you could say it's endearing or it is just still a pot shot.
Yeah.
It tanked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Islanders fans were absolutely pissed off that such a rebrand could involve such a cartoonish, non-hockey related mascot.
Oh, yeah.
With the logo.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't even like slight tweaks. It was, no, here's a completely, like, we're going to go all the way with this.
A storied franchise from the 80s that won four championships in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Goes from that iconic New York Islanders look. Mm-hmm. To the fishermen. The fans hated it so much that the Islanders had to reverse course, essentially, get rid of the fisherman logo and put the old logo back on the fisherman jersey without the fisherman on it.
Which they implemented like a teal green or like a jade green color with the orange and the white and the blue.
Which I'm in the minority. I like the fisherman
jerseys. You mentioned endearing. It is
nostalgia. It's purely nostalgic.
Exactly. There are those certain things when I think of 90s hockey, that's a part of it. That Brian Berard and Ziggy Palfy and those. And
Zdeno Chara.
Young Zdeno Chara.
Roberto Luongo.
Now a newly inducted Hall of Fame inductee, Roberto Luongo.
Exactly. Yeah. So Islanders fans, their opinion was what was most important, and it just it tanked, like you said.
The Gordon's fisherman jerseys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of teams, and I don't know if this is appropriate for me to transition into or not.
Go
but
for it.
There were a lot of teams actually in the 90s that were established already that went with the rebrand. You mentioned the Robo Penguin.
Yeah.
That just wasn't on the gradient jersey. That started in the 92-93 season.
True, yep.
And Pittsburgh fans are a little split on it still because they were accustomed to, the happy-go-lucky chubby penguin with the stick.
The stick.
And they went to this Robo Pen design. Aesthetics, which is one of the websites that I frequent a lot, they unleashed this series of jerseys that never came to fruition. Like the Flyers were going to have a rebrand, and teal was going to be a part of their jersey.
I've seen those videos. There's like three. There's like a three-part series of like just, you know, rebrands. Like there's one for the Nordiques with like a wolf on. It just it's a really cool series.
And
of
that
videos.
Was one that I was going to mention, but that jersey was actually supposed to go into circulation the year that they actually relocated into Colorado. Man. Think about an alternative reality where that would have been the jersey if they had stayed up there.
Oh, exactly. And then, and also if they had the team from the year before, because 94-95 was a lockout season.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's 48 games, and the Nordiques were first in their division.
Yeah.
So, like, can you imagine?
It's like a Montreal Expos situation.
Yeah, that team, I mean, minus it didn't have Patrick Waugh, but, I mean, I guess you can only do much with Stephon Fisse.
Yeah.
but, like,
Stephon Fisse.
Yeah, exactly. So the team that went from the Nordiques, of course, minus, you know, a Claude Lemieux and a Patrick Waugh. So imagine that Nordiques team with that rebrand, with all that, you know, they could have been something.
They had Sakic, Owen Nolan, Matt Sundin, Peter Forsberg.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think by 94-95, Sundin was with
the Maple Leafs.
With the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
But still, like, all that talent.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Ricci.
Yeah, exactly. Who, for some reason, and I remember this fact because our older brother mentioned it, because our older brother is who really introduced us to hockey, and he with several hockey videos, which are prime 90s, and one of them is called NHL Power Players, and it showcases Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky, Sergei Fedorov, Brendan Shanahan, Joe Sakic, Brett Hull, Patrick Waugh. And I think that's it.
Yeah.
And the Patrick Waugh one, it's right after they won the Stanley Cup in 95-96, and you see Mike Ricci in the locker room. Patrick Waugh's talking to Bill Clinton over the phone,
and you
see Mike Ricci standing there, and he's like, Mike Ricci, man, somehow that guy was voted the sexiest player in the NHL in, like, 1996.
It's like, huh?
It's like, what? It's like, is it slick back hair? I don't know. You look at pictures of the guy, and you know, he has gross-looking hair, and he has no teeth. But whatever.
Speaking of teams that don't exist anymore, though, not only do we see rebrandings, we saw quite a few relocations.
Yes, we did.
And expansion was huge in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is probably the biggest expansion in the NHL since the
course of a few years, because 67 brought in a whole new six teams. And over the course of those early 90s, and really into the late 90s, there was a huge boom of expansion throughout the whole decade.
It started with 1991 when the San Jose Sharks were added to the league. And that was a big to-do, because I remember that distinctly, because that was the first off season where, and this is a time before the internet, but I heard that San Jose was adding a team. I'm like, how does hockey work in California?
Right.
Because
when
the
I was
weather
a kid.
And it's like,
I was ignorant to the fact that Los Angeles had a team with Wayne Gretzky on it.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I'm like, how is hockey going to work in San Jose? And you know what? It's worked out
it's
pretty well.
They're still around.
Those teal jerseys from their early years are pretty iconic in my opinion.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
I think those, and plus, if you've ever seen the movie Surf Ninjas, Ernie Reyes Jr., the main character, is wearing a San Jose Sharks snapback.
Yep.
And that always sticks out to me because I grew up a hockey fan.
Also, in the 90s, there was a certain fashion that was getting over.
Yeah.
And even if you had never gone to a Sharks game or even knew who they were, you see that shark on, like, with those teal and white colors.
Yeah.
You could just be into, like, hip-hop fashion. You could be into a certain, like, skateboarder fashion.
Yeah.
Starter jackets. Yeah. You pick it up and you slap it on. Even if you've never, if you don't even know you don't even know the San Jose Sharks are a hockey team.
Yeah.
And the same can be said about the next year after that, the Ottawa Senators
came into
the league. And so did the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Came back. Yeah. Because, I mean, there was an old run of the Senators where they won like 11 Stanley Cups and stuff like that. But that was like early
1900s.
Yeah. And then when they propose Ottawa getting a team again, they're like, why don't we just do the Senators? We've already had the Senators.
Mm-hmm.
Except those Senators have never won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But the Senators, the Lightning, the
like
same
said,
year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know how hockey was going to work in Florida. I'm like, how does Tampa Bay get a team?
Yeah.
Guys, it's too hot.
Let's
too
sunny.
Let's go to California. Now the Ducks have a team the next year. Or Anaheim, the Ducks are a team the next year.
And so are the Florida Panthers.
Yeah,
so
the Panthers, Florida Panthers. Again. The Ducks, it's funny. The Ducks, because Orange County and Anaheim is so close to Los Angeles, they had to kind of, along with the expansion fee, they had to pay an extra sum of money because they were infringing on the Kings' territory.
Yeah.
So that's funny, too. But the Panthers as well, which 3 years into the Panthers' existence, they went to the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Predators were 98-99.
Yeah.
I counted the Thrashers just because they came 99. The 99
season,
technically, it's still the 90s, but that's kind of on the
bubble. Kind of.
You also had the Predators the year before that in the 97-98 season. Yep.
Yeah,
and
or 98-99.
If you really want to get technical about this, two other teams that you could say were approved by the NHL in the 90s but debuted in 2000 were the Minnesota Wild and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, those Blue Jackets. Like 99?
I mean, I think they were approved like in 98-99 respectively or something like that. But they both started in in the 99-2000 season.
Yeah,
right.
And then also
or the 2000-2001 season.
Yeah.
And then we saw the end of some beloved franchises
and
at
relocation.
Least by those fan bases.
Yeah, relocations.
There were four specifically, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Minnesota North Stars went to Dallas. Just became the Stars. Mm-hmm. Quebec. The Nordiques went to Colorado, became the Avalanche.
Won Stanley Cup their first season in Colorado. Yeah.
Went the first iteration of the Winnipeg Jets, because the Jets are a team now.
Right.
But that
the
was.
The Thrashers went to Winnipeg.
Back to Winnipeg!
Yeah.
Winnipeg, the first iteration of the Jets became the Phoenix Coyotes.
Right.
They were the Phoenix Coyotes for the Arizona Coyotes. And then perhaps like the most clamored for return since their leave, the Hartford Whalers became the Carolina Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricanes still have a big fan base. Hartford, they're still salty about that.
Because I think they're such a small market to where it took a lot to keep that team alive, to keep that franchise alive. I mean, you had a few keynote players. You had a few playoff appearances.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to be salty because they're like, we worked damn hard to, like, support this team the best we could and try and keep them in Hartford. But it's just such a small market that, like, the money wasn't there to keep them.
Oh, yeah.
In proximity, I think they're somewhat of, like, 90 miles or something like that. Next to Boston.
Yeah,
so it was infringing on
a lot.
You had that. You also had the fact that they played in an area that was surrounded like by a shopping mall.
Yeah, yeah.
So
how 90s is that?
Yeah, baby.
I mean, imagine if the Blues played like in the Jamestown Mall area.
Oh my God.
We would have gone to a lot more Blues games. Jamestown is a lot closer than the Kiel Center was to us.
Speaking of Kiel Center, came about in the 90s for the Blues. They were playing in the old barn, in the arena, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
It was home for the Blues until 1994.
And obviously, listener, we'll start talking about players.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, the popularity, a lot is owed to the media surrounding it, too. Like, the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
And, like, NHL 94 and then all the games following that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movies that came. Like, the Mighty Ducks was a big part of the.
That was big in helping the popularity of hockey. I mean, again, like I said, it birthed a hockey team.
Yeah, exactly.
In Anaheim.
And for Genesis, we played NHL 95 and NHL 96 and 97. But, Joe, you were, like, heavy into the Genesis game.
It started with NHL PA 93, which was actually not – you didn't have the team names on it.
Right.
Like, good example, the Islanders were actually known as Long Island. They weren't even
– Yeah.
So they had to get around that for a bit of a reason, and that was the fact that fighting was allowed in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they had blood in it. And, you know, infamously, you know, you had a movie out there that – they were trying to make Gretzky's head bleed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, the NHL series, then bred like the NHL face-off series.
Yeah.
You had players that had their own series, like Wayne Gretzky, Brett Hall, Mario Lemieux had his own.
I want to touch real quick the importance of NHL 94.
Yes.
Because
yes.
In times now, you have, like in certain NHL games, you have NHL 94 mode and arcade, NHL 94 arcade mode. So there was obviously an importance.
Street Hockey 95 with George Clinton on the front.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it looks like George Clinton.
But yeah. NHL 94 was such a huge significance.
It was because, and it took the good elements of NHLPA 93 and just turned them up to 11.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The game speed was more realistic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You had probably the biggest thing of them all. You had the one-timer.
Yes. Mm, that's right. Yeah.
So many times my older brother would not teach us how to do the one-timer, but he would slaughter us with the one-timer.
A Gretzky to Jager one-timer always pissed me off.
You're not even on the same team! Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Isn't that...
Oh, no, I meant to say Lemieux.
Oh, Gretzky,
to Jager.
Lemieux to Jager. Yeah. I was like, wait, are you playing an all-star game?
actually, and that's another point, too, is they had all-star rosters on there. So, yeah, I mean... That wasn't a thing on 94, but, I mean, later down the road, Gretzky and Jager were on the same All-Star team. Mm-hmm. So it was basically the gateway for all other video games. It set the standard.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways, it still sets the standard. And you got to add on top of it the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Being a musician like I am, every little intro music or intermission theme or whatever, all of them are bangers, and on top of it you had real organ music.
Brass Bonanza for the Whalers.
It's the small little things you throw in there, like sure, having, you know, the players and accurate rosters and, you know, all-star teams, that stuff's cool, but sometimes the stuff that puts things over the top are the small little things that could be seen as so subtle, like adding actual organ music
at that point. Truly the most authentic feeling hockey game, like you feel like you're on the ice, kind of, like, at least with the small touches, you feel like, wow, this feels authentic.
The slogan of EA Sports even to this day is, if it's in the game,
it's in the game. Exactly. Same, Mutant League Hockey is right up there with NHL 94.
Which
I never actually played. I just was doing research for the
episode. Well, so you mentioned kind of like the campy, silly stuff.
Yeah.
With hockey gaining popularity, you get ESPN2 showing roller
beach hockey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. ESPN beach hockey, total beach hockey, ESPN roller hockey.
Yeah.
St. Louis had a roller hockey team.
The Vipers.
Yes. Which,
did you catch any Vipers games?
I did not. No.
And where did they play?
At Kiel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did.
That
was also kind of the big promotion, from what I remember, is they wanted it to be this big thing, and they actually got the rights to play the games in the Kiel Center.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I was not aware of that. Full transparency, our older brother was over a couple months ago, and I just put in, like, one of my favorite memories is watching ESPN beach hockey.
Yeah.
When we were kids, and I just put it in there because whenever he's over, we'll try and go down memory lane every time he's over. And it related a video, roller hockey, St. Louis Vipers. And I was like, St. Louis Vipers? And our older brother's like, you've never heard of the St. Louis Vipers? I was like, no. St. Louis had a roller hockey team?
I wasn't aware of it until you told me.
He's like, how did you not know that? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I would have loved knowing the St. Louis Viper stuff.
Oh,
I would have eaten that up as a kid.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Actually, from what I'm seeing here, because I'm looking at some of the background on the Vipers team, they played in the arena first, then they played in the Kiel Center.
All right, yeah.
Well, all right. It's cool that they were able to have, like, it didn't have smaller places that they played or go play out in the alley.
Yeah.
They took up where the Blues played.
Yeah.
It probably didn't pack it out, but it's still cool that they were able to do that.
And what's even sweeter about it is the year that they actually folded the league, they won the championship, which was called the Murphy Cup.
Ah, oh, really?
It's named after the NHL journeyman Joe Murphy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, went to high school.
Or Larry Murphy.
Or Larry Murphy. Went to high Hall school with Famer. A kid named Joe Murphy.
Yeah, we did. And that's all I thought about was...
He played hockey, too. Yeah. I don't know how good he was, but he played hockey.
He was kind of a brown noser.
He was. He was brown. Like the real Joe Murphy. I don't know if that's true. But, like, you can only do so much with your video games.
With your movies.
Your movies.
There wasn't a ton of hockey movies, and there were hockey-adjacent movies like The Cutting Edge.
Happy Gilmore.
Sudden Death.
Yeah.
A topic of a sucktastic cinema.
Yes. Go listen to us talk about Sudden Death.
Sing its praises.
Which we love thoroughly enjoyed. Love Sudden Death.
But you, all this stuff is nothing without some of the marquee players.
Yeah, I think we're going to spend the rest of this episode just talking about the players and the rivalries.
Yeah.
Because if you get down to brass tacks, that's what sold the game for me.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, and hockey cards. Yeah. Love hockey cards.
Before we started... Before we started the episode, Joe had already pulled up from 1990 to 99 all the number one. The number one picks?
Yeah, it was the number one picks here. So the first overall draft picks in the 1990s, it was a bit of a hodgepodge. You had eventual Stanley Cup winners and Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. By then, you had a massive duds.
Oh, hell yeah.
It starts in 1990 where the Quebec Nordiques drafted number one overall Owen Nolan.
Owen Nolan. Aforementioned Owen Nolan.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be in the Hall of Fame someday. He had a lot of bright spots.
Yeah, Nordiques, Avalanche, Sharks.
Consummate leader.
Yeah,
I remember Owen Nolan as being, a thorn in our side during the 2000 playoffs when they bounced us out surprisingly.
Scored from
when we
the
won
blue
the...
line. Or scored from center ice.
Yeah. Even worse.
Yeah. Doesn't give me good memories even to this day.
Nope.
So 1991, the Nordiques were up again because they were a god-awful team. From 89 to 91, they chose number one overall every single one of those years. That wouldn't happen in today's NHL because per CBA rules, there's actually a draft lottery.
Right.
And if you win that draft lottery number one overall, you can't do it again. Thank you, Edmonton Oilers.
Yes. Thanks, Oilers.
Yeah.
So they chose, I'm trying to pronounce this guy's name right, Eric Lindros.
Lindros. Eric, the next Wayne Gretzky. Lindros.
the next one.
Yeah.
And he infamously, story went back then, did not want to play hockey in Quebec, which pissed off the whole fan base up there
at that point in time. Yeah.
But we come to find out later, because I saw an interview a couple of years ago where he fully disclosed it wasn't because of the Quebec fans, because he actually lives up there.
Yeah,
it was because of the ownership at the time.
That makes sense.
And his dad was calling a lot of shots, too, like Eric Lindros' dad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wouldn't – don't cry for me, Quebec – actually, you're not around anymore. So
Argentina, don't cry.
Yeah,
for me.
Whatever. You guys made out okay in the end because they traded him to Philly for one Mr. Peter Forsberg.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Forsberg had himself a bit of a legendary career in Colorado.
Exactly.
I mean, I think they actually ended up winning that trade overall with all the pieces that got to that cup.
Yeah, and Lindros was just riddled with concussions and stuff.
What's sad is
both
of them Hall of Famers, but Forsberg more so, but both of them didn't ever really reach the potential they could have.
Yeah, Forsberg got hurt a lot
because
too,
of injuries.
Yeah.
Because it was still a rough and tumble league in a lot of ways.
Oh,
I mean, you could get away with hits that you wouldn't be able to get away with these days.
Yeah.
Or specifically in Lindros' case, put those hits on players.
I was going to say, he was a big boy.
He was huge.
Real big boy.
He was basically the progenitor to a lot of these power forwards that became popular in the 90s and all the way into the 2010s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the brand of hockey that was still being played.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of teams like to build their roster around those power forwards.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
So then you go into 1992, and the expansion Tampa Bay Lightning choose Roman
Hammerlick. Yes.
And he had a decent NHL career.
He did. Yeah, it wasn't either. He was their captain at one point, yeah. I feel like.
Who was it? What rap video was I watching?
It was Flavor in Your Ear.
Okay, yeah. Yes. And they were wearing a Roman Hammerlick.
Craig Mack.
Yeah.
Craig Mack was wearing a Roman Hammerlick jersey in the Flavor in Your Ear music video.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
Because every time I see that jersey, I actually think more of Craig Mack than I do Roman Hammerlick.
That's fair.
Which is weird.
And then you go into 1993 and the expansion team from 1992, mm-hmm. the Ottawa Senators.
Radek Bonk.
No.
Oh, what?
Alexander Daigh.
Alexander Daigh. Oh, my God.
I got them mixed up.
It was Alexander Daigh because Radek Bonk was also somebody who was highly touted but didn't pan out, but he did a little better than Alexander Daigh. Alexander Daigh, you are correct.
Alexander Daigh was like – he dated like a celebrity, I think. Like he's for his talent, but also like he was a good looking kid.
Right.
So it was one of those things to where he was kind of he was the face of the organization.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to strap the rocket to him.
Oh yeah.
But it was a big miss for the Sens because the next pick ended up being Blues legend Chris Pronger.
Oh man.
Who was chosen by the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah.
And then two picks after that, Paul Kariya gets selected.
Oh, my God.
Who became the face of a fledgling Ducks organization. And I love Scotty Niedermayer, and I like Ryan Getzlaff, but forever captain is Paul Kariya.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Rob Niedermayer was also chosen in the top 10.
Mm.
Jason Arnott, former St. Louis Blues, was.
Scored the game-winning goal in the 2000 Stanley Cup.
And trade piece to Montreal in that big deal from Colorado to Montreal, Jocelyn Thibault.
Jocelyn Thibault, that's right.
Was the goalie that the Habs ended up getting in return.
Yes. Yeah. Patrick Waugh. Mm-hmm.
His mask was pretty cool. It had like a netting pattern.
He was
on
in
it.
Yeah. Early 2000s, Jocelyn Thibault, not too shabby.
No.
When he played with the Blackhawks. He wasn't too bad.
Late 90s, kind of decent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff Hackett had the reins in Montreal. So it was
tough
to get some ice time.
Then he couldn't hack it.
Yeah, exactly. 37-year-old Andy Moog. Was really calling the shots in Montreal.
Dougie Gilmore.
Yeah, they weren't missing Patrick Waugh at all.
1994, you had – now, this was not a sexy pick, especially for number one overall, but the Florida Panthers took defenseman Ed Jovanovski. And he had a long career.
He played in Vancouver.
He was an all-star in Vancouver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's an underrated defenseman, Ed Jovanovski.
I loved Ed Jovanovski as a kid.
He wasn't a sexy pick because he was more of that intangible leaders guy, not that guy that was producing goals.
Yeah.
He was more of a stay-at-home defenseman instead of like Pronger or somebody like that had more of a offensive touch to himself.
Yeah.
In 1995, you had the Ottawa Senators choose Brian Berard, another defenseman.
And also somebody who, whenever I think of 90s hockey and
Gordon's Fisherman Islanders jersey.
People who were specific to that time period, Brian Berard and an Islander in that Gordon's Fisherman Islanders jersey.
Brian Berard, a Calder Trophy winner from 1996-97.
He also spent a lot of time in Toronto as well.
That's right. Yep.
He was a fan favorite up there from what Steve Dangle has mentioned before.
Yeah. Steve Dangle, if you ever hear this, big fans. Yes.
Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Welcome. Hello.
The Senators also chose in 1996. This is how incompetent the franchise was out of the gate.
Yeah. Word team.
They ended up choosing another defenseman. There were three consecutive years where defensemen were chosen. Chris Phillips, who actually had a really long career with the Sens, and he stayed there. He didn't go anywhere
else.
His number four was actually retired a couple of seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
I was looking up Alexei Yashin because he was pretty big in Ottawa, and he got drafted in the second round in '92. So, I was like, wasn't Yashin a number one pick?
But he was, and he was eventually trade bait for one Zdeno Chara that we just previously mentioned.
Yes.
Different decade, though.
Yes, different decade. Yeah.
In 1997, this was probably the big hit out of every single player that was chosen in mm-hmm. the 90s number one overall. You had this forward, this big guy by the name of Joe Thornton.
Joe Thornton.
Taken number one overall by the Boston Bruins.
Never heard of him.
He wore a – I just get – whenever I think of him in the with the Bruins, I think of him wearing the cage. Like he had a cage on his helmet.
Sounds like he's pretty soft.
Yeah,
sounds like he's not cut out for the NHL.
Yeah.
Also, when he started in the league, he did not wear a typical forwards number, which is like – 10 and onward. He wore number 6 for some reason.
Yeah.
Before he switched to number 19.
It's weird. I don't like that.
What a strange bird.
And he's still playing.
He retired.
He made the Panthers.
He hasn't made a retirement official. So as of this recording, he's still an active NHLer.
Yeah. So Joe Thornton, if you're listening, hello.
Joe.
Actually, I'll say piss off because of what he did to David Perron about a decade ago.
Yeah, piss up a rope.
Bugger off.
Bugger from one Joe to another.
So I completely forgot 1998 because that was also a pretty big player. This guy from the Tampa Bay Lightning was chosen number one overall. Vincent Le Cavalier.
Never heard of him.
Sounds too French for my blood.
I'm going to say Vincent Le Cavalier.
I'll just call him.
I'm American.
I'll call him Vinny the Cavalier.
Yeah. But I mean, before you had like a Martin Saint Louis or something, like Vinny Le Cavalier was.
Well, it's funny.
Or Le Cavalier.
Because as soon as he got there, they gave him the C.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, to Matt, I was like, I can imagine after a few games, he's like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, don't give this to me. Mm-hmm. 18 years old and the captain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not Steve Yzerman.
Oh, yeah. But he's the young gun you hit your wagon
and he
to.
Became
yeah.
he be for the whole franchise, he became a cornerstone, and especially for their Stanley Cup run.
Yeah. He played his whole career in Tampa, right?
So he did not actually play his whole career in Tampa.
He went somewhere else.
He went
to
Philadelphia.
That's right. Yeah.
And then he also was he spent his waning years with the Los Angeles Kings about
a
decade
ago.
Yeah. And for those of you that may not be picking up on this, we of course Vincent Le Cavalier and and Eric Lindros.
Yeah.
We know who these people are.
We're being facetious.
Joe's being goofy.
Yeah.
Which we welcome, of course.
Yes.
And then finally in 1999, the expansion of Atlanta Thrashers.
Patrick Stephen.
probably and arguably one of the biggest draft busts, number one overall in the NHL, Patrick Steffen. And I don't remember Steffen's career mainly in Atlanta because it was kind of forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do remember is
stars.
when he
choked on the open net.
And then not to mention, was it the Oilers? They picked the puck back up and
went coast to coast.
Went coast to coast and tied the game.
Break down the moment for us, Joe.
You can find it on YouTube as well. It's hilarious.
Yeah. All you have to do is really just type in Patrick Steffen blown play.
Yeah.
The video will pop up. I would imagine if you just look up Patrick Steffen, it will probably be your first hit.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a boneheaded move. And I believe that the Stars ended up winning that game in the 2006 Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah. Sorry.
But obviously what ended up happening is they didn't win the series because Edmonton ended up taking it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Edmonton went to the Cup final.
They went to the Cup final, but
they lost against the Hurricanes.
Yeah. It's the coming out party of Cam Ward. Well, that whole series when Gerber went down.
If you have the chance, watch the clip. It's hilarious because he's literally
alone.
Within inches of an open net. Yeah. All he has to do is just a light little, as if he had an egg on the end of his stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
soft hands.
Soft hands.
Yeah.
Feather touch.
Yeah.
Right in the net.
And he missed.
Yep, exactly.
And then, like Steven said, the Oilers took the puck back, went coast to coast, and scored.
Yeah. Which epitomizes the man's career. What I remember about Patrick Steffen as well is the 1999-2000 Upper Deck MVP or Upper Deck Gold Reserve and Upper Deck series of hockey cards.
Great design.
Like the Gretzky edition.
Yeah.
There was a Patrick Steffen insert card that was like a specialty like rookie card.
Yeah.
Where it's just his face and he's like grinning and he's like and it's like top prospect. Yeah. And I remember her older brother was like, this dude's going to be a big deal. And he stuck it. And like the most protective, like card protector.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably still in her parents' basement, or he might have it, or it's still in her parents' basement. But he'll still to this day be like, man, I thought that guy was going to be something. Yeah. It was like you and everybody else, Andrew. And
then the next year, Rick DiPietro. It's like, okay, no, he's going to be a big deal.
This guy really is going
to
be.
The Islanders signed him to a 20-year
deal. Who cares
deal?
About those Sedin twins?
Yeah, exactly.
Rick DiPietro is going to be something.
Yeah. Speaking of that, huge miss there. And then Vancouver decided to pull a little bit of magic so they could get both twins in that draft.
Yeah. Another couple recent Hall of Fame inductees,
which
the
is
Sedin
nuts.
Sisters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We call them the Sedin sisters because the Canucks later in the 2000s and in the 2010s were a big thorn in the Blues' side. So we called the Sedin twins the Sedin sisters. But those are some big names, especially to where hockey would go later in the decades.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, speaking of, one little last note about Patrick Stephan.
Yes.
I found the card that you're talking about on eBay.
Yeah.
Right now, it's on a buy it now option for $4.99 plus $6 in shipping.
If I'm being honest with you, I thought it was going to go for a lot less than that. So that you could, if our older brother still has it, Andrew, you can make $10 on that card, apparently.
Or a trade of a bag of pucks, as they say.
For a bag of pucks. It's only because it's like almost like a lenticular, like shiny card, from what I can remember. But like that's
it right there.
That one. So it at least has like some sort of like caveat to the card that makes it something special. Either way, it seems like it's just a novelty.
This one specifically is number 800 out of 1999. Oh, so look at the marketing there.
It's a numbered card, so maybe that's where the value comes in. Here's where the value for us, for Matt and I don't want to speak for you, Joe, but I can assume it's almost the same. The value in the decade itself had to be the players. Had to be who were the not just the prospects, but who were the hot shots? Who were, you know, we mentioned Brett Hull earlier. Wayne Gretzky still had a presence. Mario Lemieux still had a presence. So these 80s hockey that bled over. But some of the top point scorers are some pretty big names known for the 90s.
Who do you have on your list there?
So let's see. So I printed out the list of 50 top point score. I don't want to say, because there's goal scorers, there's assists, so point obtainers,
right?
Point scores. So I printed out a list of the top 50 of the decade. Now, of course, it's 50, so we're not going to go in depth with everybody.
Yeah.
If there's a name that pops up with any sort of significance to you, give your little blurb.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to name everybody here. So number one, actually, I'll start at 50.
Yeah, let's start at 50.
Number 50 was the aforementioned Owen Nolan.
Owen Nolan.
He had 518 points in the decade, 254 goals, 264 assists, so not too shabby, in 643 games, so that's good. A stalwart player.
Yes.
A solid linesman.
Yeah.
Speaking of solid, not just play-wise, but physically, Chris Chelios.
Chris Chelios.
Yeah, Chris Chelios had 427 points, 755 assists with 96 goals. Pat LaFontaine, who doesn't get talked about near enough, he was in the top 10 in points in several years of the 80s and the 90s. So Pat LaFontaine, who had 532 points, says 410 goals, or sorry, 410 games. Oh, I got Chelios's numbers mixed up. He had 523 points with 427 assists and 96 goals. Mm-hmm. He played 755 games.
Ah.
So Pat LaFontaine, 210 goals with 310 assists. Dmitry Krstic, 537 points. Ray Shepard, who played for Detroit, had 543 points. Number 45, Rick Tockett, who had 550 points. Another guy who was in top 20 goal scorers.
Yeah.
Keith Tkachuk, Blue. His sons are in the league. His sons are all stars in the league. 552 points. Trevor Linden, who he's kind of a decade player.
Mr. Canuck.
Yeah. I've always been a Trevor Linden fan. Next to Pavel Bure, whenever I think of those Canuck skate 90s jerseys, their best
Trevor
jerseys,
Linden.
I think of Trevor Linden.
Another big boy.
Captain. He was the captain.
Doug Waite. Doug Waite, who is another former Blue, 557 points. There's kind of some hard feelings because Doug Waite played for the Blues for a few years. Then he went to the Hurricanes.
Won a cup.
Won a Stanley Cup. And then he came back to the Blues, but only for a season.
Because he was dealt for Andy McDonald.
Exactly. Yeah, he went to the Ducks. He was 37, 38, and dealt for 30-year-old Andy McDonald.
Yeah.
So I liked when Andy McDonald played for the Blues.
He was scrappy.
Yeah. Larry Murphy, 566 points. He had cups with the Red Wings and
the Penguins. Yeah.
Kind of an offensive defenseman. Mm-hmm. Phil Housley, another one.
Another underrated
former
guy.
St. Louis Blue himself.
Former St. Louis Blue. Yeah. Yeah. I always think of him in like a Winnipeg Jets jersey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same. Or a Sabres jersey.
Yeah.
After Phil Housley, Paul Coffey, in the 80s set the record for most goals by a defenseman.
Yeah.
He was somebody who potentially could score 50 goals. I think he only scored maybe, he was in the upper 40s.
Yeah.
But really,
for anybody, but he was a defenseman.
After Bobby Orr kind of innovated that offensive, defensive style of play.
From what I hear, though, he was from people who were who remember watching Paul Coffey, is definitely an instigator. Like, he would start fights and then run away.
Yeah, he was a pest. Beneficiary of those Oilers teams.
Like an early TJ Oshie was.
Yeah, like, he had cups with the Oilers, with the Penguins, and I think with the Red Wings. Or maybe, he was on those rebuild Red Wings teams.
Yeah. It was an interesting transition point. Yeah. I remember him because... So my brother and I used to play each other in NHLPA 93 a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually chose the Canadians and I would choose the Red Wings.
Yeah.
Because they had Probert on the roster. And if I just got pissed off on how many goals my brother was scoring on me, I would stick Probert on somebody and get into a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But the person that ended up scoring goals for me was Paul Coffey.
Yeah.
Makes sense. They were in this era before Scotty Bowman came along in the 95-96 season.
Mm-hmm.
They were in this dead things area where they were done rebuilding, but they just couldn't get over the hump in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's probably where Coffey's known for his play with the Red Wings at that time because he was kind of in a transition point, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And you just can't build a team around Tim Cheveldae.
Yeah, exactly.
Curtis Joseph grabs Cheveldae.
Here comes Cheveldae.
Yeah. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
No, I don't. but after Paul Coffey, kind of lesser known, underrated, but I mean, another high point getter and goal scorer, Steve Thomas.
Yeah.
For, you know, when he played, longtime Maple Leaf and Islander. Mm-hmm. Mainly Islanders was some of his bigger seasons.
Yeah, started a franchise.
Yeah.
Wendy's.
Exactly.
That's Steve Thomas.
Yeah. Joey Neuendijk.
Joe Neuendijk. I love Joe Neuendijk.
Especially, I like thinking of Joe Neuendijk for those,
star.
The 98-99 Stars in that awesome-looking Stars
but
jersey.
But made a splash with Calgary as well.
And also involved in a very infamous trade where the Flames end up getting in return Jerome Iginla.
That's right. Iginla was drafted by the Stars.
I'd say his career didn't end up too bad.
Yeah, I think he was all right.
He was also a 90s pick because he was in the 95 draft.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. I just wish he would have won a cup.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Somebody who transitioned into all-star play into the early 2000s, Peter Bondra.
Man,
583 points
goal
in the 90s.
Scorer too.
Mm-hmm, for the Capitals. Cliff Ronning. Former Blue, and former Canuck.
Yeah.
He went to the Stanley Cup with the Canucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trevor Linden, Kirk McLean, Pavel Bure.
Yeah. So Cliff Ronning had 588 points. After Cliff Ronning, another Canuck. He's known as his moniker, the Russian Rocket.
Pavel Bure.
One of the fastest players of all time. Pavel Bure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love Pavel Bure.
So I got to add something about Bure, besides the fact that he was probably the most frustrating player to go against in NHL 94.
Yeah,
it's probably super
fast. And 95, for that matter, because of his speed.
Mm-hmm.
But you were talking about the gradient jerseys
that
they used to wear. I actually remember those a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like them, actually.
Oh, the red and black?
And partially the reasoning behind that was Bure just looked so good in those jerseys.
And it was his 96, too.
Yeah.
switched his number twice. It was 10 and then 96.
Yeah, and then 10 again when they became the whale jerseys.
There's another rebrand. They rebranded into the Orca.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Orca. And I love one of the indelible looks of the 90s for me is Mark Messier in that Canucks jersey.
Yeah, really late 90s.
Messier, McGillney, and Paavo Buure in those jerseys.
Buure 96. Man, I love a 96 Buure Canucks jersey. Mm-hmm.
It just looks so odd, right?
Yeah.
To see somebody wearing a 90s number except for Gretzky.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm here for it, baby.
Yeah. And, well, also, Paavo Buure is also one of those what ifs because, of course, he's a Hall of Famer and his numbers are completely justified.
Still put up big numbers with Florida,
too. He missed a couple seasons, too. I loved when he played for the Panthers.
Yeah.
50 goal seasons.
Yeah.
So Paavo Buure, Tony Amani, 594.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only Blackhawk I liked as a kid was Tony Amani, and mainly Tony Amani in those black alternate jerseys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And there also, was another third jersey that a team cool. unveiled.
I
Plus,
liked those.
Tony Amani had a pretty sweet mullet.
Yeah, he did.
Not as good as Yager, but Tony Amani.
Or Bernie Nichols.
Tony Amani, 594 points. Kevin Stevens, 597 points.
Somebody that got in trouble with the law here in St. Louis.
And East St. Louis, right?
Right,
Yeah.
Apparently a lot of shady shit hockey players goes down in East St. Louis. Chris Pronger talks about some trouble he got into in East St. Louis.
Yep.
Al McInnes. 598 points.
Chopper.
Still one of my top three favorite Blues
all
time. Love Al McInnes. I have an Al McInnes Blues jersey. I love Al McInnes. And, of course, his claim to fame is having possibly the hardest shot in NHL history.
Yeah. I mean, let's remember a game in 1998 where he basically took a shot right from the red line and scored.
Yeah. Yep. Did he break someone's testicle?
I think I heard that.
Yeah.
I read it in like
maybe
an Al McInnes
a rumor
book
or something.
Yeah. It's one of those rumors.
It's called Taking Your Testicles, the McInnes story.
Yeah, exactly. Someone,
talk about Chopper.
Someone who's a GM now, Pat Verbeek.
Pat Verbeek, 603 points. Whenever I think of like a time capsule player, someone who is like had that window of time to where he was just real big. Pat Verbeek is always a name
goals.
That comes to my mind. Plus, I just like saying Pat Verbeek.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever I think Hartford Whalers when I think Pat Verbeek.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. I remember NHLPA 93. The first person that I saw on Hartford's team was Verbeek.
Pat Verbeek and Jeff Sanderson. Those are two people I think of when I think – and Shanahan for the Whalers.
Yeah.
Speaking of Francis for
the Whalers, too.
Yeah. But speaking of Shanahan, not in the best way here, Craig Janney, 611 points. Craig Janney, who Shanny for Janney, or Shanny and Janney, who were teammates. Were they line mates?
Yeah, at one point in time,
Eskimo
they were.
Eskimo Brothers. You're right. Don't Google that. I'll just let you know. Brendan Shanahan had an affair with Craig Janney's wife, and Craig Janney's the one who got rid of.
Isn't Brendan Shanahan still with Craig Janney? Well, it's his wife now, probably.
Yes.
I thought we confirmed that on one of our episodes.
From the Point Mike Keenan episode.
Yes.
We talked about that.
Yes, yeah.
John LeClair. 615 points.
He was on the cover of NHL Faceoff 98, I think. Mm-hmm.
Super underrated.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of assists that are related to his point totals. He was Lindros's line mate on the Legion of Doom line.
Yeah.
Lindros, Recchi, and LeClair.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark
and then
Recchi.
Later it was Michael Renberg.
Yeah. Michael Renberg, and then throwing Eric Desjardins at the blue line.
Yeah.
Those were good Flyers teams. Mm-hmm. They just didn't have solid goaltending.
Minus
Ron Hextall, but like into the 2000s, Roman Čechmánek.
You throw Brian Boucher in there or something.
Like
Robert Esch.
Exactly. They're getting taken out by the early 2000s Penguins.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yep.
Speaking of somebody who I don't think gets enough love, an underrated 600 goal scorer, Dave Andrechuk.
Yeah.
Has 626
He's
points.
Great.
Great leader, was the captain of the 2004 Tampa Bay Lightning Cup winning team.
Exactly. Yep. That was a very Ray Bourque-esque type playoff story yeah. for the tenured vet who just never won a cup. More of a journeyman, mm-hmm. Dave Anderchuk, kind of a journeyman 600 goal scorer.
Yeah, yeah.
He had his stays in Buffalo that
Colorado.
Were big. Colorado. His stays in Toronto. Mm-hmm. But he won the cup with that 2004 Lightning team.
It's one of my favorite cup finals, actually, of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking Flames and Tampa Bay.
Flames and Tampa Bay, that was fun. We watched that. And then also some of the best Gary Thorne calls, some of the more indelible Gary Thorne calls, yeah. who's my favorite hockey announcer.
Oh, yeah.
Were in that cup. Also, I liked it as a kid because the Lightning had a very similar goal horn to the Blues.
Yeah.
They still do.
Yeah. yeah. Yep. Brian Leetch, 640 goals, one of the greatest American-born hockey players of all time.
Yeah.
Super Mario.
Mario Lemieux. Of course.
He still had 656 points in the 90s despite pretty much missing the better part of like three or four seasons because his original retirement was in 97, but also he missed significant chunks of the decade because he had Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he came back and still won the Hart Trophy and the scoring title all. And he came back in the early, in 2000, he became part owner of the team and then owner of the team and came back and played until 2006. So Super Mario is a legend. And if he had the time that Gretzky did, arguably, he probably would have scored more.
I think so.
Eric Lindros, who we mentioned before, 659 points. Again, not too shabby for somebody who got hurt a lot. Rod Brind'Amour.
Former Blue, Rod the Bod.
He also had a great story in the 2006 Stanley Cup. Finally, another vet who won the cup.
Oh, yeah.
With the Carolina Hurricanes. So, Rod Brind'Amour, 664 points. Raymond Bourque. The greatest scoring defenseman of all time. Ray Bourque, 680 points.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander McGillney, who should be in the Hall of Fame, 715 points. He had a 76-goal season.
Him and Fedorov were... Basically, defected from the Soviet Union. Like, weren't they? They were like ushered into the States under the cover of nightfall.
That's
basically
how they'd come in, like Bure.
Yeah,
all those guys.
Trying to get these Russian players on teams back in the late 80s, early 90s was a very covert operation.
A lot of times, for sure.
I mean, we have to look back in the 1990 season. Sergei Makarov.
Makarov.
Was the Calder winner that year.
He was 32.
I think he was. I know that he was above like 28 or something like that.
Okay.
But they had to change the Calder rule specifically because of him.
Yeah.
And how long he actually had played hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he was a defect from the Soviet Union.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's a really good, we listen to a podcast called Crime and Sports.
He was 31 when he won the Calder.
To where they have an episode about Sergei Makarov because, like, he was kind of a troublemaker off the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Not as bad as some of the other people they cover in crime and sports, like an Eddie Belfour.
Yeah.
Or a Kevin Stevens.
Yeah.
But Makarov, he had some trouble, but he is notable for one of the defectors and Calder winner.
What number are you on of the 50?
So number 20, Teemu Selänne.
Teemu
Selänne, my
finish
man.
Finish flash.
729, rookie record in
76 goals.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. He would throw his glove up and pretend
to shoot.
Yes. Love Selänne.
The thing is, that was the only time he got above 50 goals in his career.
But he
was consistent with 30 and 40 goals and then also kind of a tent pole on those 90s Ducks teams.
Ooh, yeah.
Had a stop in San Jose. And then
I remember him and Korea both.
Yeah.
That was big news. I loved it. But then he probably got his greatest success, some would argue, when he went back to Anaheim when he finally won the Stanley Cup.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love
Teemu Selänne. A guy who's polarizing for me because I don't know how I feel about him, but Brendan Shanahan.
Yeah.
Great player.
Shanahan, the hot hand.
I love the Ken Wilson calls for Shanny. I love seeing him in a Blue Note, but also he went to the dreaded Red Wings.
And he won several cups.
Yeah. Then also he's kind of a wet blanket in the NHL as far as like being like over like hockey operations for
like. Yeah, it's like, isn't he like the director of player safety?
No, he was at one point, right. But now he's the director of hockey operations for the Maple Leafs. I think they're like in year 7 or year 8 of the Shanna plan, and they still keep getting bounced out of the playoffs.
Hey,
really?
Austin Matthews scored 60 goals this year, yeah, so there's something.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Maple Leafs had some good 90s teams. I mean, they met with the Blues and when we were still in the same conference.
Yeah.
Worst division, baby.
Yeah. That was another with the expansion, the divisions changed.
Western and Eastern Conference, which some of my favorite all-star
jerseys. Gary Bettman's like, we're going to make it easier for people to follow.
Hey, where's everybody going? In the 94-95 season.
I think they should go back to naming them after hockey legends.
Yeah.
Like Campbell, Smythe, Adams. Yeah.
So after Shanny, Sergei Fedorov, who was part of the Stanley Cup teams, who I hated as a kid. I'm not a fan of him now, but I don't hate him. I hated him as a kid.
Like the face of Nike hockey.
Yeah.
Sergei Fedorov.
After Sergei Fedorov, the greatest American scorer of all
Mike
time.
Madonna.
Mike Modano. Love Mike Modano.
Mr. Willa Ford.
Exactly. 741 points. Vinny Domfus, 743.
Yeah.
Guy who goes under the radar, but he was a stalwart for the Canadiens and the Sharks.
Cup with the Canadiens.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Vinny Domfus, 743 points. The greatest captain of all time, Mark Messier.
Mark Messier. My
opinion, 744 points. Luke Robitaille. Lucky Luke, the star. Star of sudden death.
Yes.
Lucky Luke Robitaille, the greatest left winger of all time.
He had a pretty good stint with the Rangers, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so Rangers, Pens, Kings.
Penguins is one that I forget.
Yeah.
He's sudden death. He was,
Luke Robitaille, 756 points. Dougie Gilmore, former Blues young gun.
Yeah.
Doug Gilmore, who went to the Flames and helped them win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But Doug Gilmore, 775 points. Jeremy Roenick, 787 points.
Speaking of NHL, Sega.
The one thing I will give to Jeremy Roenick is he did cop to the fact in 2019. He's a hockey correspondent now.
Yeah.
He did give the Blues credit in the 2019 playoffs.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah. Is it NHL 94 where Jeremy Roenick is like super overpowered?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So Roenick.
Yeah.
One of my favorite comebacks and slam dunks on Jeremy Roenick. I'll talk about it when we quickly talk about Patrick Waugh. Matt Sundin, number 11, 788 points. Guy who really tried his damnedest to help the Maple Leafs. He did, but it just didn't pan out. You need a whole team for that. Ronnie Francis, number 10, 814
points.
Love Ron
France. Ronnie Franchise, baby. Yeah.
How appropriate he's number 10 on this ranking, too.
Yes, perfect. Exactly.
Hartford, Carolina, Pittsburgh.
One of my favorite players, small man, fast guy, and one of my favorite Avs, even though he was only there for a cup of coffee.
Chris Drury.
Sure. Theo Fleury.
Theo Fleury. Rhymes with Chris Drury.
818 points. Theo Fleury. Number 8, a man who should be in the Hall of Fame, and one of my favorite Blues growing up, Pierre Turgeon.
Yeah, what the hell?
One of my favorites, too. I remember that Ken Wilson call when we clinched the series in 99 against
the
Coyotes.
Yes, yes.
Oh, baby, Pierre Turgeon!
Pierre Turgeon!
It's so good.
Oh, baby!
Plus with the Islanders, the Sabres.
Yeah.
Dude scored goals. He had a nose for the net.
I'm going to give you a hot take, and this is blasphemous because I did this whole episode with Chris on From the Point about Brett Hull.
Yeah.
One of the very few reasons why I actually didn't really miss Brett Hull was the fact that Pierre Turgeon was on our team
at that
same time.
Yes. Yes.
And all that goal production that Hull left us, Turgeon, he picked up the slack.
Yeah,
I so much for that. One of the best playmakers that the Blues have ever had. Was deadly as a sniper, too.
Ooh, baby.
Yep.
I miss that goal-scoring touch that he used to have.
Yeah. Number 7 here.
I'm not wearing it right now, but I have a Turgeon Blues jersey.
Number 7 here, you might want to be careful there, Joe. Brett Hull. The man who put Blues hockey on the map in the 90s. Brett Hull, 842 points at number 7. Number 6 above him, Mark Recchi.
Mark Recchi's great.
I love Mark Recchi.
He was a machine.
Absolutely.
He went into a very long career. Oh, yeah. That ended with him hoisting the 2011 Stanley Cup Pittsburgh. With the Bruins.
Or with the Bruins, yeah, yeah.
Several Stanley Cups.
Didn't he win a cup in Pittsburgh?
09, yep.
Yeah,
09. His production, 534 assists on 330 goals. So he was a man who was a playmaker and was great at passing.
Unselfish,
and getting it, yes.
Yeah.
I just looked at his plus. Shit. Stevie Wise plus minus. Stevie Wise the next one. Steve Yzerman, one of the few Red Wings I'll give credit to.
Captain.
Quiet captain. 534 assists for 336 goals, 870 points, and 164 plus minus.
So this is pretty effective when he's on the ice.
Oh, yeah. Sergei Fedorov actually had a higher one for 229. Yeah. However, Stevie Y is higher with points, mm-hmm. 870 points. Wayne the Pain, the great one,
Wayne
number
Gretzky.
Four, even yeah. in the 90s when his career started tailing off.
Yeah.
878 points.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, probably some might say, maybe not the better half, but an important half of Hall & Oates.
Adam Oates.
Adam Oates.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, 896 points in the 90s. Above him, my favorite player of all time.
Joe Sakic.
Yes, Joe Sakic, 896 points. And number one, the best hockey hair you will ever see.
Jaromir Jagr.
Jaromir Jagr, 958 points. An ungodly, almost 1,000 points in the 90s, Jaromir Jagr with 958.
May I cover some goalies,
Talk
Steven?
About the goalies. Would that be okay with you, Joe?
That's very appropriate that you would be wanting to dive into yes. our goaltenders in the 90s.
By yes. design.
According to, would it be the one according to the NHL
Network?
Yes,
the
Network.
NHL Network had a list of top goalies in the 90s, and they did 15-1. And so I'm going to start at 15. We're going to get down to one. Mm-hmm. And the main statistic that they put with their selections is number of wins.
Yeah.
But that's not always a great indicator
no.
because the number one has far less wins than like 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But his impact is super important.
Oh, yeah.
So let's just start. Number 15, Grant Fuhr.
You know, former St. Louis Blue.
Former St. Louis Blue. Yeah. Started 79 games.
Yeah, that was in the 95-96
yeah,
season.
Which is how he got hurt
yeah.
and during those playoffs.
Even into his late 30s, still had some great flexibility.
Yeah.
Still was a wall in
oh,
the
yeah.
net.
Yep. 14, Felix the Cat.
Felix
the Potman.
Cat.
Mm-hmm. Number 13, Kirk McLean.
Kirk McLean. He was
solid.
Super solid.
Early 90s Canucks and helped them mm-hmm. to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Number 12, the severely underrated Bill Ranford.
Mm-hmm.
He was the starting goaltender, if I'm not mistaken, for the 1990 Edmonton
yes.
Oilers team.
Yeah. They won the cup.
Yeah, mm-hmm. without yep. Gretzky. That yep. was a big deal for Edmonton.
That was.
The Jari Kurri,
Mark Messier. Yeah. yeah.
Was McSorley on that team? I think he was in L.A.
He was in L.A. at
okay.
that time.
Number 11, Ron Hextall.
Ron Hextall,
so,
yeah.
Number 10, Chris Osgood, former Red Wing,
yeah,
former Blue. Number 9, the Beezer.
The Beezer.
John Van Beesbrug.
Are very much a late 80s into the late 90s.
Dominated with the
yeah.
Rangers mm-hmm. and the Panthers.
Yeah.
Cover athlete of NHL 97.
Yeah, I remember yes. it very well. I remember his mask had... Is the cage on the mask had an interesting design mm-hmm. that I wasn't used to. It had a more boxy feel to mm-hmm. it, his mask did. And it's very distinct because it's just a giant panther.
Yeah,
yep.
that's
yeah.
the most memorable thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And probably still one of my favorite goalie
oh,
masks
I love
of
it.
All
yeah.
time.
Oh, now,
yeah.
he had a cool mask with the Flyers, more of like a Beezer kind of
with like bees
yeah,
on the back.
But
and like
I mean,
with the
that
Flyers
Panthers
logo.
Mask.
Yeah,
it just came at you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Super iconic. Number 8, Tom Barrasso. For
yeah.
former Blue, Tom Barrasso.
I love him.
Oh, I just want to say by Barrasso. Yeah, he won two cups in the early 90s.
Yep.
Bit of stalwart, you know, a great backstop for those Penguins
teams.
Did you
say top 15 or 20? Because I think.
15.
Isn't it top 20?
It's 15. Yep.
Right.
Barrasso. Number 7, Cujo. Curtis Joseph.
The one that got away.
Right?
Thanks, Mike Keenan.
Yeah, thanks, Mike Keenan.
If we just would have given him one or two more years, he could have been the one behind us in
yeah.
the Stanley for the Stanley
I
Cup.
I mean, he's granted, a lot of times he got bumped in the first round, but he's a strong playoff
goalie.
He's
faced still the most beloved goalie he's faced, St. Louis has ever had.
What, like 70-something shots in one series with St. Louis?
Yeah.
Just in like game one.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, granted, I mean, your defense is pretty porous if you're facing 70 shots. He had a big series against the Stars.
Yeah.
Like their rival.
For Edmonton.
Yeah, exactly. Number six, Conn Smythe winner Mike Vernon.
Yeah.
So he kind of flies under the radar.
He has two Stanley Cups.
Mm-hmm. One with the Flames, one with the Red Wings.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite looks of the 90s is Mike Vernon in a Sharks jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Ed Belfour in a Sharks jersey. Well, both of them. The Sharks had both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, and it also goes without saying that Avs-Red Wings rivalry of the late 90s.
Oh, my God.
Vernon and him.
Ooh.
Patrick Waugh going after it.
Yes.
And then the next year, Chris
Osgood.
Just all
bloodied up.
Yep. Our older brother, our aforementioned older brother, Andy, he had a picture in his room of Patrick Waugh versus Mike Vernon, like all bloody and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just,
that,
I remember
that was an iconic fight.
I remember it hanging in his room. He got it for his birthday one year. Top five, number five. Speaking of iconic goalie masks, I love this guy, Mike Richter.
Mike Richter.
How
love
could you
Mike
not?
Richter.
Especially the Lady Liberty's mask that he had.
Oh, it's
one
just great.
One of my favorite hockey cards of all time is Mike Richter. He's in position, and he has the white Lady Liberty jersey on. It's still one of my favorite hockey cards I've ever had of all time, and I really like Mike Richter.
Oh yeah, and plus his big butterfly sprawled out save against Pavel Bure.
Yeah,
in the Stanley Cup final on a penalty shot. Like it was a penalty shot, right?
Yes.
Pavel Bure on the penalty shot.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest save of his career, I think. Number four. Marty Brodeur.
Former Blue.
Mm-hmm. Former Blue. No one could ever take that away from us.
I saw one of the games that he started when he was behind the net in the 2013-14 season.
Oh, man. Oh, that's awesome. I remember watching his first shutout as a Blue at a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, I remember. I was thinking about that the other day. But the winningest goalie of all time, Martin Brodeur.
It's true.
Number three, Eddie the Eagle. The thorn in the Blue side for years.
Destroyer of visiting teams' locker rooms.
How
specifically
satisfying.
Ours.
Satisfying. Oh, baby.
I remember that whole playoff series because that was like the vindication as a kid of seeing the Blues go against the Blackhawks in previous years and getting bounced out. And then all of a sudden, we just sweep them in the 93-94
beautiful.
Season during the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Beautiful.
I get chills.
So
days.
Great, unbelievable,
unbelievable. Number two, St. Patrick
Waugh.
Number two,
my favorite.
Yeah,
one of my favorite hockey quotes of all time. Back to Patty Waugh and Jeremy Roenick in the '96 Western Conference Finals. No, Western Conference Semifinals because they faced the Red Wings in the Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Patrick Waugh was jaw-jacking with Jeremy Roenick, and one of the setup is Jeremy Roenick's like. It was like there was a questionable call he thought should have been a penalty shot. And Patrick Waugh made a comment about it. And he's like, you know, it's big talk from Patrick Waugh. I just want to know. Jeremy Roenick's like, I just want to know where he was at in game three, probably getting his jockstrap from the rafters because the Blackhawks and beat them.
Patrick Waugh's rebuttal.
Patrick Waugh's like, I couldn't really hear what Jeremy said because I had my two Stanley Cup rings plugged in my ear.
And
I laugh so hard because I don't like Jeremy Roenick and Patrick Waugh, his confidence.
Yeah, I can see like the head movement was just plugged in my ear. Like I can see the whole interview in my head because I love, that's one of the best like burns.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you say to that? You have zero cups. He has two at that point.
He had zero cups even afterward because he never did win one.
Exactly.
To a nicer guy.
Yeah.
And to quote, the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, to a nicer guy, couldn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And then number one, the Dominator.
Dominic Hasek.
I think if you're mentioning these rankings and whatnot of these goaltenders, hands down, Hasek just obliterated everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. He had his own style. He played like I think it was a Buffalo radio announcer. They're like, no one liked him at first. They're like, he's playing. He plays differently. Plays the wrong way. He plays the Dominic way.
Yeah.
He had a signature. It's like John Davidson said, like in the Mass Men video. He's like, he went to the doctor and just, they thought there was something wrong.
Yeah.
You don't have these rubber knee joints, and he's just.
I mean, he's the Dominator.
Mm-hmm.
He carried the Buffalo Sabres.
A none more fitting name than the Dominator.
Exactly, exactly.
Also, let's go back to the fact, speaking of Jeremy Roenick, the fact that the Chicago Blackhawks had a little bit of a goalie predicament in the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And the third person on the goalie depth chart was a young Dominic
Hasek. Hasek.
And they went ahead and just let him go to Buffalo.
And
you know who's the coach of that team? Mike Keenan.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They sent him to Buffalo where Grant Fuhrer was already the starter. So it's one of those. Another goes, but then Dominic won out, and he became a future Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He became a Hall of Famer.
And as we've seen, the most dominant goalie of the 1990s. That also means we're out of time. And it's tough because, again, like we said at the beginning,
I say one of these days we dedicate a whole episode to the rivalries.
The top rivalries of the 90s. It was massive.
Oh, yeah.
Included the most bloody of the 90s, according to NHL Network, the Avalanche and the Red Wings.
Mm.
And that was only from 90. That was just from the word go.
Yeah.
That was going to be a bloody rivalry. But, Joe, it's always a blast having you on here.
Any parting thoughts?
Yes, parting thoughts on the decade.
There is so much material to cover.
I know.
We didn't even go over the Stanley Cup champions of each year.
No, the winningest franchises.
We mentioned some of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's like I said at the top of the episode, this was the modern golden age of the NHL. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And arguably to probably about 80% of NHL fans in the world, you probably could say that and you would not have any disagreement about it.
Mm-hmm.
You might have some crusty old curmudgeon that remembers back in the days of the original six.
Yeah, exactly. Tiny Thompson and
but there is so much material to go over in the 90s because it was such a pivotal decade for this league. I'm going to just say it right now. If it wasn't for 90s hockey, we would not be in the position that we are today.
I agree.
All the players that you see in the league now that are all-stars, superstars, they were all born in the 90s at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm wearing the shirt of one of them, Jordan Binnington, Stanley Cup winner.
He's very expressive on your shirt.
Very nervous.
Exactly.
But it all ties back into how successful that decade was. Marketing, jerseys, players, you name it.
Yeah.
It was all in that decade.
Oh, yeah.
The 2000s, when you get into that decade, it's the direct result of everything that happened in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it had its unique moments too, including a very dark moment, arguably the lockout of 04, 05. But we won't get into that because that decade. But everything good about this league stems from how it exploded from 1990 to 1990.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course.
At some point, I'm just proposing this now, maybe just because I'm in a good mood.
If you can believe it, this was the tip of the iceberg on this decade. We can go so much more in depth.
I mean,
things.
At some point, bring Chris in when he can, and the four of us do a part two. We can tackle some rivalries.
Somewhere down the line.
Stanley Cup winners, winning his franchises.
Exactly.
I'd be down for that.
Of course.
Like a part two for this
episode. Of course.
Part deux.
Part deux.
That would be very 90s as well.
Part deux.
Yes, part deux.
Exactly.
That's the follow-up.
not
next week, but at some point.
It's going to happen at some point, definitely.
Maybe when the hockey season starts. We'll see. Plan it ahead.
Plan it ahead. We'll see what happens. But for right now, Joe, thank you for being on.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me back. It's good to be rad.
Oh, yeah,
fantastic.
It definitely is.
Glad you're rad.
We were glad to have you talk about truly the coolest game on earth.
But
until next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you be rude? You could be rad. See you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.